Support comes from the Norton Simon Museum, presenting the film series Testigo Witness, Goya in the Movies. Held on select Fridays in May, each film touches upon artist Francisco de Goya's visions of the world, kicking off with Pan's Labyrinth by Guillermo del Toro on May 10th at NortonSimon.org.
You have the chance to win a spring super sweeps from LAist. Donate $60 for one entry to win a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Check out all the other prizes too when you donate now at LAist.com/sweeps.
It's Film Week on LAist 89.3. I'm Larry Mantle. Great to have you with us. I'm joined by film critics Tim Cogshell of Alt Film Guide and Cinegods.com and Christy Lemire, film critic for LAist, also RogerEbert.com and co-host of the Breakfast All Day YouTube and podcast series. We begin with John Wick Chapter 4, starring Keanu Reeves. The director is Chad Stahelski, who's directed all of the Wick films, and the screenplay written by Shay Hatton and Michael Finch. Please start us, Tim, with John Wick Chapter 4.
This is hot. He had a little help from David Leitch in that first film. 2014. Not quite a decade for four films here, which are really just this one big sort of Homeric Joseph Campbell, hero's journey. Sort of dipped, this one sort of dipped in elements of the Arabic, a little bit of the Al-Hali-Ali here, a little bit of the Bhagavad Gita here in this film, literally cultural references to those Eastern epics in this movie. I really like folks who are bright and do things like that. It just really makes me so happy. Wick is still looking for his release from the table, this deep organization that runs all of these hitmen and assassins all over the world with these hotels and all kinds of stuff. So that's all still going on. They send this dandy after him. And I mean a dandy. This guy dresses, I mean, really kind of dresses like me, but he really is a dandy. He's a marquee, played by Bill Skarsgård. He's the weak link in this film. It's just a weak link in this film. It's him and his character. He didn't scare me. I feel like I could take that guy. I definitely know John Wick could take that guy. But nevertheless, they draw him out by bringing in all of these people to track him, some of whom are his very good friends, including Donnie Yen, the exquisite Donnie Yen, a blind swordsman in this film. And it's just so beautiful the way he works through this film. He's exquisite in this movie. And other folks, including this guy that they call the Tracker. Now, the Tracker is this brother with a dog. Yeah. A dog, which, of course, is what's going on in this movie. We're bringing it all back around. Here's the thing. Movie's too long. It's just too long. The movie itself is too long. Each of the segments of the movie are too long. The fighting sequences are too long. Everything could be smaller, tighter, cleaner. I get it, guys. You have to make it big. It has to be epic. That doesn't necessarily mean long. It just doesn't. If you want to make good, sometimes go for shorter. I love these films. I love this film. It's fantastic.
And, of course, we have one of the final performances from Lance Reddick. We're going to be seeing him, I know, in a number of productions. He passed away unexpectedly at the age of 60 earlier this week. It was like seeing him come on screen in this film.
It's amazing. And one of the reasons why I haven't talked much about what actually happens in this movie, because it's some really prescient stuff that goes on in this movie. I know Lance from way back in the day, way back to Oz and all of that, used to run around with him. And it was a really big hit, you know, to hear about Lance. Lance was only 60 and just sort of devastating and wonderful in this movie. And the movie pays homage to him in ways that perhaps it didn't think about.
Wow. John Wick, Chapter 4. Christy, what did you think?
First of all, Bill Skarsgård is awesome in this movie. He knows exactly what movie he is in. He is vamping it up. Everything he wears is spectacular. He is having a good time as this very effete villain here. And you mentioned, Tim, the various cultural references here. Like, Chad Stahelski has the bravery to ape one of the most famous cinematic cuts ever. He does the Lawrence of Arabia match cut. And when I saw that happen, I'm like, oh, that's bold. Oh, that's where we're going with this. That's impressive. But yeah, it is way too long. When I heard that this is going to be 2 hours and 49 minutes, I was like, woohoo, more John Wick during our Oscars show. I'm like, yeah, more John Wick. We can't have enough. 2 hours and 49 minutes is way too much. John Wick, because while there is so much style and so much care that goes into the fight choreography, you know, Chad Stahelski is a former stunt coordinator. He really cares about letting us luxuriate in the complexity of the movements. The individual fight scenes go on way too long, to the point where it becomes numbing, and to the point where, like, John Wick is beyond immortal. Like, yes, he's the Baba Yaga at this point, and that gives him some supernatural abilities. But there's a scene in a Berlin disco where he, like, falls off of a railing and, like, lands on his back on this concrete abutment and, like, should be dead from that, and, like, gets up and fights more dudes. It's a lot of fun here and there.
Yeah, it definitely moves into the epic. It absolutely moves into the
epic. It's crazy. Yeah. It's a lot of fun here and there. I mean, Keanu is a treasure, of course. Lance Reddick brings all kinds of warmth and wisdom and grace, and we'll talk about him later on. I love Keanu with Ian McShane again. If you like these movies, you'll love this movie, but there's just... It really is too much. And it's a lot like a video game at times, too, which will really appeal to a lot of viewers. But to me, that element of it did not.
John Wick, Chapter 4, directed by Chad Stahelski, written by Shay Hatton and Michael Finch. It's rated R in wide release. A Good Person, drama starring Florence Pugh, Morgan Freeman, and Molly Shannon, written and directed by Zach Braff. Christy.
So once again, Zach Braff is in New Jersey. It's the place where he likes to make movies. And that is where Florence Pugh, we see her in the beginning living this sparkling life. She's a young woman named Allison. She is a talented singer and pianist. She is adored by everyone who knows her. She's about to get married and she seems really happy. We see her at her engagement party. Shinaza Uche is the young man she's gonna marry. The next day she is driving a car and her soon-to-be sister-in-law and her husband are along with her for the ride to go check out bridal dresses. And they get in this horrible car accident. And Florence Pugh's character survives and the other two die. And the rest of the film is about her redemption, her hitting bottom and getting really hooked on OxyContin and grappling with this survivor's remorse. And it's then how she comes back from that with the help of a really unlikely source of support, Morgan Freeman, who is the father of her former fiance, the father of this deceased young woman. And Florence Pugh can't help but be great. You know, there is such an authenticity to her presence. She makes such smart choices that feel raw and real. And there are several moments here that really ring true and are quite startling at times. There's a scene between her and Molly Shannon as her mom, where they're having a huge fight over a bottle of pills in the bathroom. And it's shot so intimately and so intense, like you feel like you were in the middle of it, and it's harrowing. It's very scary, because really anything could happen in that moment. And then she had to do the obligatory thing that happens in so many sobriety films, where she goes to a meeting and she shares her story and it's all one long take and she's crying, and she really brings it. She brings it in a lot of scenes. But there are so many heavy-handed maudlin choices that Zach Braff makes from a narrative perspective. There are some outlandish things these characters do that make no sense. There's a very heavy-handed metaphor involving Morgan Freeman's character and his obsession with model trains and how that speaks to, like, our desire to create a perfect life for ourselves that's impossible to attain. So it's got its moments, but it's a very frustrating film for me overall.
Mm. A Good Person, Tim.
Yeah, A Good Person, the thing we all think we are, we all claim to be, hope we are. Can we engage? Can something happen that can render us unable to be a good person forever? Redemption, as Christy says, and grief and forgiveness and responsibility, all issues and subjects of this film, sometimes spoken issues and subjects of this film, which they never, ever should be. I love a good single director, single writer kind of thing, that auteur thing, you know, because, you know, they can go one of two different ways, though. Sometimes they can be very cohesive and specific and pointed, and sometimes they can be a rambling mess. Zach's film airs toward the rambling mess. A lot of ideas here, and somebody, a co-writer, would have been able to say, no, not that, nope. Like that, you know, but when you're all by yourself, nobody says that. The reason it doesn't become a rambling mess is because Morgan Freeman and Florence Pugh are just so damn good. Just so good. Even when they're saying things that they ought not to be saying because nobody should be talking right now, they're still doing it well.
A Good Person. From writer-director Zach Braff, Florence Pugh, Morgan Freeman, Molly Shannon star. The film's rated R. It's in select theaters. It's Film Week on LAist 89.3. Larry Mantle joined by our critics. Christy Lemire of RogerEbert.com and co-host of the Breakfast All Day YouTube and podcast series. And Tim Cogshell, film critic for Alt Film Guide and Synagogues.com. As we continue, we're going to hear what they have to say about the movie Jasser, the film written and directed by Waheed Al-Kawazmi. We'll also hear about Tori and Lokita and Rodeo. Those are just a few of the films that we're going to be hearing about. Those are coming up on Film Week here on LAist 89.3. So good to have you with us. Hope the start of your weekend is going very well. We'll continue our conversation with our critics coming up momentarily. And remind you, if you miss any of the reviews on our regular broadcast on LAist 89.3, you can hear the full podcast of Film Week wherever you get your podcasts or your audio, as well as at LAist.com. It's Film Week on LAist 89.3. Larry Mantle with critics Christy Lemire and Tim Cogshell. Up next is a film that's set in Memphis, written and directed by Waheed Al-Kawazmi. The film stars Malik Rabani, and it's titled Jasser. Tim, what did you think of Jasser?
Well, this is just an excellent social drama. And it's original of the Dardenne brothers, which is interesting because we're going to be talking about a Dardenne brothers film just coming up here in a moment. And this is a real-world drama about a Syrian refugee, a young man about 25 years old, fled the war, lands in Memphis, searching for the American dream, not finding it. He works at a restaurant. Interestingly, for another Syrian family that's been in America a little bit longer and left before the war and still have feelings about Syria that are not his feelings about Syria. He friends up with this brother who's also working at the restaurant who wants to be a rapper, and there's a daughter there who he loves him. And he has this neighbor played by Lorraine Bracco. And man, is she a piece of work, and she is just wonderful in this movie. She's an
alcoholic,
and she smokes too much, and she's a little bit racist, and all of that. And you know what's going on, but he is this guy who is simply going to find that American dream. He's going to find it if it kills him. He will not stop being hopeful, which is there's a difference between this film and a Dardenne brothers film. The Dardenne's not always so hopeful. This movie will not give up because this young man will not give up. And that's what I loved about this movie. He gets beat down, but he will not stop getting back up.
So you see the resiliency in the character and the acting performance by Malik Rabani?
He's just wonderful. It's what he does. Malik speaks English fairly well, but his character doesn't. And that's this thing that he engages in. He knows what that feels like when nobody can understand you. And what I also love about this movie is when we see his American friends start taking the time to understand him, it's really a beautiful thing to watch. Lorraine Bracco even comes around.
All right. The film Jasser is shot in Memphis, again, written and directed by Waheed Al-Kawazmi. The film's rated R, and you can see it at the AMC Theater in Burbank, as well as the AMC location in the city of Orange. Tori and Lokita, a film from the Dardenne brothers from Belgium, Jean-Pierre and Luc Dardenne. The film stars Pablo Skeels. Christy, what did you think of Tori and Lokita?
Yeah, this is definitely not one of the Dardenne's more hopeful films. This is quite devastating, but so well made. And in their style, you know, that what they do is so understated. They create so much power from just the simplicity and the minimalism of their filmmaking. You know, quite often they'll just follow their subjects around. They are fascinated by the lives of people on the fringe, immigrants, the working poor, people who have been marginalized, and they watch them with great sympathy and just great simplicity and let the drama of their lives play out. And that's what happens with this story. But a boy and a girl named Tori and Lokita, they're played by Pablo Schills and Jolie Mbundu. They are both non-actors. They've never worked before. And this is incredible, the realism that they bring to this and the poise that they both bring to this. They are immigrants from Africa, and it's about how they are trying to survive, like trying to piece together work. They aren't really brother and sister. They met on the boat and kind of got smuggled over together and have been, you know, for all intents and purposes, are kin to each other at this point. They each is all they have for the other. And it begins with this really riveting and kind of harrowing single shot on this teenage girl, Lokita, as she's being interrogated by, you know, government workers trying to determine, is she really related to this boy? He's got papers, she does not. And it reminds me of that long single shot in Never Rarely, Sometimes Always, where the young woman's being interrogated before she has an abortion. Just the range of emotions she has to show all at once. There's just nowhere to hide, you know, and it sets the tone for what's to come. It's about how these kids are piecing together work and how, like, not only is the system like rejecting them, it is exploiting them. And grown-ups use them as drug dealers and worse. And yet they still fight for each other. They fight to survive. It's really, really hard to watch, but so well-made and so necessary. And these two kids are just great. And there are these glimmers of hope. There are these moments where they sing together or they play together because they are still just kids. Tori's probably only like 10 years old, you know, but has to have the wisdom and the streetwise presence of someone much older. So it's really well made, but very hard to watch.
Well, and that's not uncommon. As Tim was saying earlier, the Dardenne films can be a tough watch, but still an amazing film. So often, Tori and Lokita, the film we're talking about, it won the 75th anniversary prize at the Cannes Film Festival last year. It's in French with English subtitles. Tim, what do you think?
Well, it was extraordinary, this film. Yeah, he's about 10, she's about 14. He is wise, but she is brave, and they are wholly and fully dedicated to each other. And given that the Dardenne brothers do, in fact, document mostly the sort of narrative lives of regular French folk, workaday people in factories, doing this and that around. The fact, whenever they turn their camera on the Arab population or the Black African population, is very important in the culture, because what the Dardennes are saying is these are everyday French folk. And we are going to include them in our narrative canon. So he's speaking to the population. He's speaking to us. He's saying, if you're thinking French, you got to think about these people, too. And this is what we're doing to them.
The film, again, Tori and Lokita, from the Dardenne brothers, Jean-Pierre and Luc. It's unrated. It's at Landmark's New Art Theater in West Los Angeles. The French film Rodeo stars Julie Ledroux and Yanis Lafky. The film's written and directed by Lola Kiveron. Tim, what do you think of Rodeo?
Another very, very good film in this tradition that we're talking about now. Julie Ledroux is the name of the young woman, the young actress who plays Julie in this film. She's this odd girl who actually looks kind of odd. She has a great gap in her teeth. And she's ridiculously beautiful, actually, but people use her looks against her. They call her ugly. She's also irritating. She's a liar and a thief. We see her lying and stealing all the time in this movie, and everybody around her kind of knows she's a liar and a thief. So they're, you know, she loves motorcycles and this gang of boys who ride these motorcycles. That word rodeo. That's what they're referring to. It's the rodeo. This team of motorcycle boys riding around, and she wants to ride with them. They do tricks and race and all kinds of stuff. But the way she gets her motorcycles is by pulling a scam. She'll have one of these boys call and pretend to be her father. I'm going to buy this motorcycle for my daughter, this road bike for my daughter. I'm going to send her out to give it a ride. Just let her take it for a ride. She likes it, so I'll buy it. She goes out. She takes it for a ride. She steals it. And she falls into a group of thieves doing this. And we can see where this is going to go. The thing about it is Julie is probably the most insightful, the brightest person among all these folks. And she loves children. There's one young woman that has these kids, and she takes up with these children. But she gets involved with these people who are stealing these motorcycles and doing other things. And it becomes a very difficult film. But again, it's this slice of life that I didn't know. I didn't know that there were French kids riding around doing all this kind of stuff. And I loved that they took us into this world on the back of this young woman so that we could see it from her perspective. It's a really, really good film.
So these are three straight films we've been talking about that are these difficult slice of life movies.
Yes, social dramas, just wonderfully done.
This French film we're talking about, Rodeo, written and directed by Lola Kiveron. The film is unrated, and you can see it at the Lemley Royal Theater in West Los Angeles. The Lost King, a British comedy starring Sally Hawkins, Steve Coogan, and Harry Lloyd. Stephen Frears, the director, Stephen Coogan, and Jeff Pope are the writers of the film. It's based on the 2013 book, The King's Grave, The Search for Richard III. Christy, what'd you think of The Lost King?
This is not a bleak slice of life movie.
Now for something totally different.
Yeah. We broke our streak. Stephen Frears gives us something really comforting and sweet and solid and sincere. So as you mentioned, yes, this is based on a true story of this woman named Philippa Langley, who became obsessed with finding the actual burial spot of Richard III. She's played by Sally Hawkins, and just having Sally Hawkins show up and be herself is just so radiant and so compelling. Like, she's got that smile that you just can't get enough of. But there's such like vulnerability to her and believable fragility to this character. She suffers from chronic pain and she's small. And so people underestimate her when she goes to one person after another in the academic field and the archaeological field and literature, anyone who will listen. Like, I think that he has been wronged through history, and I think he's buried in this very specific place, and I want to go and find him. And people blow her off because she's a woman, you know, because she's middle-aged, and so she has to overcome all these obstacles just to get anybody to listen. And then, of course, there's the actual process of digging him up. All throughout the course of this, actual Richard III follows her around and he talks to her. It is a magical realism element that Stephen Frears wisely underplays, plays it in an understated way. It's not like, ooh, like spectral Richard III floating in. It's the actor that she saw in a play portraying him. He's played by Harry Lloyd. And like, they talk to each other on a park bench and it's like a normal conversation, but you know, he's not really there. And so that could have been too cutesy, but they find just the right tone. I mean, Stephen Frears is 81 years old, has been doing this forever, and has such an eclectic filmography between like Dangerous Liaisons and Dirty Pretty Things and The Queen, and he just knows how to make a solid, efficient film, and that's what he has done here. No big surprises. Steve Coogan is Sally Hawkins' ex-husband, and they have a sort of an interesting relationship. It's unusual. It's nice. It's a nice movie.
And we'll continue hearing about The Lost King, rated PG-13 in wide release. We'll hear what Tim has to say about it when we continue on Film Week on LAist 89.3. It's Film Week on LAist 89.3. Larry Mantle with critics Tim Cogshell and Christy Lemire. Christy was just telling us about the British comedy The Lost King, starring Sally Hawkins, directed by Stephen Frears. Tim, what did you think?
Nice indeed. The Shakespeare, written by Richard III, was written 150, 160 years after Richard's death, right? So the character that we know, my horse, my kingdom, the hunchback, the evil man who killed his nephews, all of that, that's from Shakespeare. And the notion of Philippa and this group called the Richard III Society is that none of that is true about him, that he was actually a very bright king who maybe didn't have a hump in his back. We know now that he had scoliosis, so, you know, a hump, but he definitely had scoliosis. So all the sort of historical issues in this movie, finding his body and doing that, all happened. That's cool. Philippa did that long ago. That's all great and neat and interesting. I don't know that I needed to go deep into the sort of interpersonal dynamics of her and her family. She has chronic fatigue syndrome and her husband, they're kind of divorced, but not really. All that stuff is in there. And I'm like, Richard kind of walking around chatting with her and stuff like that. Again, look, I'm not really sure. It's sweet. It's nice. But there's a lot of interesting stuff here. Really interesting stuff. And I think that stuff was good enough for a movie without all of this extra stuff.
The Lost King, rated PG-13 in wide release. The documentary Gods of Mexico is directed by Helmut Dos Santos. Tim.
Yeah. If you read the byline for this, the chapter line for this, it says it follows the resistance to modernization in rural Mexico, and that is so accurate. There's almost nothing in this film but footage and audio of these people working at the things that they do. We're with gold miners who work in a gold mine the old school way, pickaxe, shovel, water. Sometimes, though, they do have these gigantic boulder crushers that they literally feed rock into by shoveling it, crushes and crushes. And they work down deep, deep, deep in the mountains. Mules are the tool of choice that these people work with. And we're with farmers who are doing hand farming. The cinematography is absolutely exquisite. Very often, this sort of crisp, stark, black and white film. Much of this work is doing in the summer in various different places across the sort of Mexican landscape. The landscape is beautiful. These people, their faces, they have these ancient faces, these Incan faces when they're out there in the sun doing this work. And they sing and they dance. And then there are these little bits and pieces of the modern world that drift in. Somebody has a transistor radio. And is that Kanye? What's that? Is that what? Because we're here in this place, yeah, where there's none of that. But every now and again, listen to it. Turn it on and listen to it. It will blow you away. There's no dialogue per se. Occasionally folks talking to one another, but no dialogue per se. It's just the cicadas, the sound of fishing, what it sounds like when you are fishing. You know, you don't think about something like that, but there's a sound that comes with that. It's fascinating.
We're talking about the Mexican documentary Gods of Mexico from Helmut Dos Santos. The film is unrated, and you can see it at the Lumiere Cinema Music Hall in Beverly Hills. The mystery thriller The Tutor is directed by Jordan Ross, written by Ryan King, starring Garrett Hedlund, Victoria Justice, and Noah Schnapp. Christy, The Tutor.
This movie is very silly, and I can't decide whether it's so bad it's good or just plain old bad. Like, it veers into so bad it's good territory eventually, and it fully embraces its obnoxiousness. But, like, until then, it's on very shaky ground. So Garrett Hedlund stars as the titular tutor. He is paid a lot of money by wealthy New York families to help their kids get into Ivy League schools and, you know, do better on exams and all that. And there's a whole montage of these awful spoiled kids and their, you know, detached, moneyed parents. And this is who he has to deal with all day, every day. And there's an intriguing premise there, almost like they're doing like a fictional version of the Operation Varsity Blues scandal, you know, almost like they're trying to do another kind of Eat the Rich movie along the lines of The Menu or something like that, like satirizing these vapid privileged lives. There's a premise of an idea there that had some hope, and then it becomes something really wildly different. So Garrett Hedlund's character, Ethan, gets hired through his agency to go out to this just palatial waterfront mansion to go tutor this kid named Jackson, played by Noah Schnapp, who was Will Byers on Stranger Things. And this kid is kind of odd and self-possessed and kind of unsure of himself, but like an incredible student. And he's really smart and like obviously does not need this help at all. But it's thousands and thousands of dollars to stay there all week with this guy on these like huge sprawling grounds. And it turns out that there's something more devious afoot here that this tutor has been ensnared in. His girlfriend is pregnant. He needs the money. There's just nothing to any of these people. There's nothing to these characters. They're like all one single idea. And then once it veers into actually dangerous territory, it just gets so silly, so laughable. Like, how did we even get here? So this is not a good movie. I wouldn't recommend it, it's almost terrible.
The Tutor is rated R. It's in select theaters. And we have a restoration this week of the 1952 Rory Calhoun starring Western Way of a Gaucho. Tim.
Oh, yeah. Jacques Tourieur, Gene Tierney in this film. 1952, American film set in Argentina, which is great for all kinds of reasons, right? Shot on location there. It's original visually. There's no Monument Valley to lean on and all that stuff. Original face and all that. But that's not why it was shot there, for artistic reasons. It was shot there for money. Right after the war, there were all these currency controls, and a lot of the studios had money offshore all over Europe and Argentina. Fox had a whole lot of money in Argentina that they could not repatriate. So they decided to make the movie in Argentina. And it's a really sort of interesting story, but it did provide for a movie that did not look like the other Westerns of the day because it was just from a different place. Didn't make a dime at the time, but it's a beautiful movie.
And glad it's restored,
oh,
I'm
yes,
sure.
Gorgeous, gorgeous.
We're talking about Way of a Gaucho, which has been restored from its 1952 release. The film's unrated. You can see it at the American Cinematheque in Los Feliz. We want to take a moment to remember Lance Reddick, who died of natural causes earlier this week at the age of 60. One of my favorite roles of his was as LAPD chief Irvin Irving in the popular Amazon streaming series Bosch. Let's listen to a clip from the pilot episode of Bosch where Reddick's character is talking to Detective Harry Bosch, played by Titus Welliver.
Bosch.
Deputy Chief, been subpoenaed too?
I'm only here to show my support.
Yeah.
You got me wrong, Detective. You have to understand something. My primary objective is to protect the reputation of the Los Angeles Police Department. And we don't wash our laundry in public, especially not in federal court.
So you're not here to hang me out to dry?
On the contrary, the department exonerated you.
They had to. It was a good shooting.
And here in the John Wick franchise, Reddick played Sharon, a slick concierge at the Continental Hotel, who was sympathetic to the needs of Mr. Wick. This from the first film in the series back in 2014.
Good evening, Mr. Wick.
Good evening.
How may I be of service?
Is the doctor in?
Yes, sir. 24/7.
Send him up, please.
Yes, sir.
How good's your laundry?
I'm sorry to say that no one's that good.
No, I thought not.
May I suggest a drink, sir? Bourbon, perhaps.
That sounds perfect.
We have less than a minute, but Tim, your thoughts about Reddick and his versatility as an actor.
Yeah, absolutely fantastic. First started running into Lance back on Oz, back early 2000, something like that. I was doing journalism, so I would bump into Lance. Lance was a Yalie, and we both thought it was absolutely hysterically funny that the Yalie was playing that guy that he was playing on Oz. And over the years, he moved into the suits and the ties and
authority
the
roles.
Authority
yeah.
roles, all that kind of stuff. He was just a wonderful, wonderful actor, and people just loved him. Great musician, too, Lance Reddick. Look up some of his catalog.
Christy Lemire, quick item on Lance Reddick.
He just brought such elegance and grace and wisdom to the John Wick franchise. He was great on The Wire. And also beloved for his voice work on the video game Destiny 2. He was the voice of Zavala. And
which
players
he played.
Are now paying homage to him there as well.
All right. Thanks so much. It's Film Week on LAist 89.3.
The LAist Spring Super Sweeps is happening now. You can win amazing prizes while supporting your source for local fact-based journalism. One lucky grand prize winner will get to choose a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Other prizes include an electric bike from Juice Bikes and $1,000 gas gift cards. Your donation of $60 gets you one entry to win. And the more you give, the more entries you get. Donate now at LAist.com/sweeps.